This conference will...
There we go. Great. So today we're going to be talking about Michael J. Durkin, Double Your Contacts, the second half of the book. We did the first half of the book last week, and I'm just going to conclude and finish off his book, which I've totally enjoyed. So let's jump in. Oh, you know what I did? I forgot one more thing I wanted to tell you guys. Let me tell you this. If you go on your internet today, you're going to find some new news, and I think it's invaluable in helping you get people involved in the business. You know, I always love to use whatever hit in the news, but this new article came out by Don Sears, and it's entitled 6 in 10 Workers Living Hand to Mouth. With the unemployment now at 9.7% at the end of August and expected to rise to 10%, it's not a surprise to see so many people living paycheck to paycheck. Of the 4,000 workers surveyed by CareerBuilder, 6 in 10 people are living from payday to payday, include many who earn more than $100,000 a year. So we have a lot of people out there, people, that are looking to earn additional cash flow in some way, shape, or form on a part-time basis or whatever. So you have a solution for that, so let's get out there. It just really excites me when I see things like that because I know there are people out there grieving, needing, and we have some solutions. And we just need to be what? Doubling our contacts, exactly. So let's jump in. So, Michael, the last 6 chapters of the book we'll go over quickly here. The first chapter the sixth chapter talks about when to make your calls, head games, networkers play to avoid. And, you know, we can look at a lot of the reasons why we don't make our calls, right? I mean, I don't have to tell you them, but Michael kind of went through in his book and he gave some of the excuses people say about why they don't make calls. Well, when's the best time to call and all that kind of stuff. And I'll just read you some of them out of his book. I never make calls on Fridays because people just aren't into working on Fridays and their head just isn't into it. I don't like to call right after lunch because people are usually tired after eating and that's not the best time to approach them. I don't like to call between 11:30 and 2. That's when most people are either thinking about lunch or at lunch. And I'm just wasting my time by leaving voice messages. I never call on Mondays because people are just getting back from the weekend and they're not ready to receive sales calls. I like to give them a chance to settle in. During the summer, forget calling on Fridays and Mondays. People are not into it after lunch. I never make calls after lunch. I try to get all my calls in before 3 p.m. because nobody wants to get a sales call when they are thinking of going home. In this business, forget calling people during the holidays. There's a moratorium on making decisions. You can't call people between 5 and 8. That's dinner time, and you'll interrupt them. They'll be upset, and that's no way to start a prospecting call. I never call right after work. People need time to shake off the day. I call between 7 and 9. Are you guys getting this? He had this, like, 2 pages of these things, and by the time you read all of them, you'll figure out that if you take on this philosophy, you're never going to call anyone anytime because there's always a reason you can make up why people aren't going to be open to hear what you have to say. So he was hilarious. That's what he's telling us. He's saying to psychically predict the best time to call potential customers is just crazy. So he says, quit it. You know, it's not something we should do. So what do you want to do? Just call. Well, you want to just get into it and call. If you remember that we talk about the big circle, about 60 to 70% aren't going to be interested anyway. All your analysis is just causing what I call paralysis for you. So just get out there and call. He talked about cell phones are giving us tremendous flexibility today. In fact, if you understand his concept of a list, making a list, he always has people write down a list. It's something you write into in writing. You're not putting it in the computer. You might do that as well, but you carry a list around with you with all your prospects and their names and numbers. And with cell phones, boy, you can call them anytime. You can call them in the car. You can call them when you're at a sporting event. You can call them when you're in the bathroom. You can call. I mean, it's hilarious. In fact, one of my favorite times, this is really funny because I started laughing when I saw this. You know, when I'm on trips sometimes, you know, Lydia will go, well, where are you? And I'll go, well, you know I always call you in the bathroom. It's like whenever I go to the bathroom, it's kind of like killing 2 birds with 1 stone. So it's about time management. So you can take that cell phone and you can call people when you're in the car, when you're on the way to pick up kids. And the other thing, it gives you some flexibility, as he said in his book. You can tell people, you can say, you know what, I'm on the way to pick up the kids. So I don't have much time now. And so you can actually put a time constraint on it because of your busy schedule. So think in terms of that as well. But people, get out of the big issue here is get out of the excuses. You play so many mind games about why not to call somebody. And if I asked all of you on this call, I'm sure you all have had a time where you're sitting down and you know you need to call somebody, and you just drain that brain for an excuse why not. And you and sometimes you're just so excited when one of your kids interrupts you or your husband interrupts you or the phone rings so you can get talk to somebody else. We let everything get in our way, and that's absolutely wrong. We got to quit doing that. Look at that habit if it's in your life and stop it. Just call. They're people. They breathe like you and I. They put their pants on one leg at a time like you and I do. And they're in great need. And when you take that perspective, it's a lot more fun to get out there because you're going to be able to bring solutions to people's lives. Okay? So quit the head games and be straightforward on getting those calls in. Number two, he talks about scripts, why you should have one and how to use it. Now, this was an interesting chapter for Mary Jo because I have typically never been a big supporter of scripts. I like it when people are so natural on the phone. I want it to come from your heart. But the more and more I read his chapter, the more and more I got very satisfied that I have been taking a erroneous pathway, that scripts are critical. And I found that to be true with a couple of my new people I started this summer, that they just felt that they didn't have language. And if they don't have language, again, it's another cause of paralysis for people. And it, sure, in his book, he said what? He said, why do you need to have scripts? Well, number one, he says, nothing kills a networker faster than when you have a couple of bad calls and trip over words and get tongue-tied. And that's what happens with new people. They just start stumbling over their words. They don't know what to say. They don't have consistency in their verbiage. And they just fall all over the place. And they look foolish. And maybe they don't even look foolish to anyone but themselves. But whatever it is, it robs them of self-confidence. And then they think, I can't do this. And the minute you have a new associate that says, I can't do this, you've lost them. You want people to believe they can do it. And there's going to be enough things out there that happen in their lives that are outside your control, but this is really something that's within your control. So as a leader in bringing on a new prospect or bringing on a new associate, we ought to really consider helping them with putting together some basic scripts. So I'm kind of chose, in fact, part of my 90-day Manitech challenge is I'm taking out all the scripts and I'm redoing them and putting them in Manitech lingo out of Michael's book so that we can truly have scripting on doing calls and all that kind of stuff. Isn't that great? I mean, I'm just very convicted about that we need to have that, and I'm going to have people use that in that 90-day challenge to really, really use that system and watch it work for them. So anyway, so I'm a new script believer. Other reasons it's critical to have a script. Number one, a script gives you a starting place. Beginning is typically the hardest part of the call. A lot of people go fall off base before they even get started. So if you have a script, you have a kickoff point. You know where you're going, how you're going right off the bat. So you don't crack up in that early first sentence or two that typically can cause a call to crumble. Number two, having a script helps you get back on track. Well, why do you need to get back on track? Because in any conversation, you know what's going to happen is people are going to go in different directions, so you're going to want to go, ooh, where are we going? Well, with a script in front of you, you could just take your pen and kind of highlight where you need to jump back in. So if you didn't have anything in front of you, you might just let that conversation go for the next half an hour. And that's not what this is about. It's not a social hour. It's about, hey, we have a goal to accomplish in the call. Sure, you're willing to open up and allow the person to talk a little bit and do a little bonding, but you want to take back control of the call, and having a script gets you right back on track. Having a script gives people confidence. Real or not, does it matter? And that's the interesting question. Because he talked about it may not even be true confidence, but it is confidence. It's a perceived confidence because they feel, hey, I can say this. So now I can do this. So that's a level of confidence. And if there's one thing I would love in all of my brand new, associates is a feeling of confidence about doing this Manitech business. Should you practice? Reading it a few times before your spouse could help. But again, as you can imagine, Michael says, just do it. Michael's kind of harsh sometimes in his approaches, but yeah, I can agree with him that we just need to get out there and start doing it. So if you feel like you want to practice a couple times, fine, but the only way you're going to be great at this is if you just start using it. So get out there and start using it. And quit waiting. For those of you who are analysts in the group, you're not going to be perfect. In fact, I don't want you to be perfect, because people out there aren't perfect either, so they're not going to have an expectation of you being perfect. And if you come across so perfect, you're clearly going to show them that why they can't do it. So again, don't wait till you're perfect. How do you avoid sounding like you're reading? Well, in his book, Michael talks about something. He says, you know what, there are people that are going to sound like they're reading, and you don't want to get into that. And that's one of the reasons, main reasons why I've been kind of anti-script in my life, is because I sure wouldn't like it if somebody called me and started reading off of something. But how do you make it sound that you're not reading? Well, he has a technique called audio acting. And what he tells you to do is, this is what audio acting is. You take, for example, just do a brief exercise. Call up a few of your friends on the phone and tape it. So have a portable cassette recorder with you so you can tape your conversation. You don't need to tape both sides of it. All you do is need to hear yourself. So call a couple of friends and put a tape recorder there. Then when you get done with those three phone calls, then play back the recorder and listen to what you say. What you're going to notice in your conversation with your friends or loved ones or relatives is that in a normal conversation, you can call it screwing up, but you have ums and ahs and yups and stuff like that. That just naturally occurs in a conversation that you have. You may have different words that you favor and that come out. And he says that's what we call a normal conversation. It's what we've gotten used to. It's our lifestyle. It's how we communicate. So he says now you just want to do is convert those into and build them into your script. So script back in the normal parts of your conversation. Because the way we write and put down sentence structure and draft paragraphs isn't necessarily the same way we talk. And I think that's a great concept. So that's just, it's called audio acting. And so you can do that. And then he got into, don't you dare ad-lib or you'll destroy the call. Well, what ended up in my notes was exactly that language. And, in fact, he was just kidding. So I want everybody to mark that off. We already are changing the one that's going on the website. But it's not, whatever you do, don't ad-lib. I mean, whatever you do, understand that ad-libbing is always going to happen. It's always going to be there because you're going to get off track. There are going to be different things that are said, so sometimes you're going to have to fill in. And it's just nice, you have the flexibility of ad-libbing whenever you need to, but the idea is the script is there to keep you on track. So it's not something that's carved in stone. So, whatever you do, know that ad-libbing is going to be part of your conversation, just, conversing with people and coming up with things that aren't on that script as well. All right, so everybody get scripts down. I think it's cool. I'm going to start using them myself because of a further chapter in here, chapter 12, and you'll see that when we get to it, that I'm excited about. All right. So the next thing Michael talks about is tips for staying motivated, how to sound strong and confident on the phone. And a lot of you have had some phone coaching and things like this. This isn't anything new for many of you, but for those of you who have never heard this before, it might add some newness to what you may already know or something that you never heard. And it talks about how we talk and communicate on the phone. Your posture and your physiology, how you're sitting, you're standing, whatever it is, make a huge difference in how you project on the telephone. And I teach this as part of my pathway class at all, because pathway classes as well, because I think it's really important that we have clarity in our voice and that we come across the way we want to be perceived. It's intriguing how many times that we go out and we say some things, and this is why I'm just enamored today with feedback. I spent, 40 years of my life never wanting feedback from people. Today, I can't get enough of it. I just want to, I want people to give me feedback. Tell me, what do you think? How could we be better? Because I don't know how I get perceived all the time. It's all I can find out is what people will tell me and give me some honest feedback. And honest feedback isn't criticism. All it is it's somebody else's opinion about what transpired. So you want to get that feedback so that you can either apply it, take it for what it is, tweak, fine-tune what you're doing to perhaps be better so that you make sure that you're coming across like you want to be. And so that's important for us. So we all should look out for feedback. And in our phone conversations, in our phone habits, we sometimes carry a lot of bad habits. And some of those are even what you're drinking. I teach people never drink ice-cold water because it tends to freeze up your larynx. It locks it down and it makes your larynx less flexible. So you want to, whenever you're going to make a number of phone calls, you're going to be on, talking to people, prospects or new associates, make sure that the drink that you have is something that's more like room temperature. So Some of you don't like those kind of drinks, but, you know, that's the way I drink most of my water, and it's perfect that way. So, but that'll make a difference, too. But what Michael talks about in his book is he talks about posture and physiology. He talks about stand up quickly and energetically, take deep breaths from your diaphragm, real deep. You know, there's some statistic out there, something over 90% of us don't even breathe properly in this country. We don't breathe deep enough. We're not taking in those big breaths. We're just little short little breaths all the time. And when you deep breathe, that's so much healthier for you as well, because it gets the oxygenation is better in the bloodstream and everything else. So make sure that you're taking deep breaths. But stand up quickly, energetically, take deep breaths, think about really positive things, keep your head straight and your eyes up. And it's an intriguing thing. He said when you have your eyes up, there, you can't frown. And that was kind of a funny comment. I never thought about that way, but it's kind of intriguing. But anyway, but that's his idea. He says, that's what you want to do. He says, headphones can even be more important for you and allow you to be more effective. Of course, first and foremost, I have people in my downline that use headphones sometimes. And they always screw up. They drop me. They sound distant. You've got to make sure if you're going to use a headphone that people can hear you. Because there's nothing more disparaging when you call somebody and do a follow-up phone call when you're on a headphone that either echoes or your voice gets loud and then soft and then loud and soft. You know, it's just poor quality. If you're going to invest in a headphone, invest in a high-quality headphone so that it comes across right. But a headphone can dramatically improve your effectiveness of your calls because it allows you to get up and walk around. And for some of you, like Mary Jo, who just feel like there's no way any words can come out of my mouth unless I move my hands, any of you relate to that syndrome? I always laugh because when I go on and talk at different places and travel, they always look at me, no matter if it's at my church or it's all around Manitech, everybody always goes, Mary Jo, I don't think a word would come out of your mouth if we tied your hands behind your back. And that's somewhat true. Some of us are that's just who we are. We like to use our hands when we talk. It's part of our whole modus operandi. Well, when you use a headphone, you have the flexibility of doing that. And if it makes you more comfortable with your communication style, then do what makes you most comfortable, because that's when you're going to be most effective. So getting up and walking around also gives you more energy, and you can grab onto more power. It's more powerful for you and your communications. One of the things he also said, he talked about grab your prospect by the throat. Of course, in a nurturing way, he added that. And what he means by that is he really is trying to suggest to us that we try to do something different. In other words, what distinguishes our call from all the other calls that this person is getting? I mean, you know, people get so many mundane calls during the week and all that kind of stuff, and what distinguishes our call? What makes us different? You want to make sure that you're grabbing the attention of the person, so distinguish that. And that means we come across powerful, confident, you know, in control. We don't want to just be, sound like a wet dish rag, kind of mamsy-pansy. You really want to be solid. You want to, and that's a word that he likes to use, is the word solid, which means confident, it means comfortable, it means I'm truly here to support you, honest, come from your heart, and watch the difference in your communication with that person versus everyone else that's calling. So it's just something to work on for us to really try to be the best we can be in that phone presence and stay motivated with it, consistent. You know, some of you might need to type up a little card and put it on your desk, and every time before you start calling, you read that card, you know, with some real positive affirmations and then just the little quips about the advice. Keep your eyes up, keep your head up, keep, you know, stand up if you can, walk around if you've got a headphone, and just be natural and be powerful and confident in your calls. And just make those notes so that we're in bad habits. When we're in bad habits, we need to be reminded over and over and over again to stay out of those bad habits, and we will create greater results. All right, the next chapter he talked about, it's using your ears to hear, how to develop instant rapport over the phone. And that's a good chapter that talks about one of my favorite topics, which is listening skills. Because I know that's one of our areas that we're really short on. And how do I know that? Because I fall in that category, and I had horrific listening skills, or should I say, you know, you can't even say, it's kind of a tautology when you say horrific skills. I had very little, if any, listening abilities 10 years ago, And I work on it all the time because I know it's a habit that I developed from where? I was trained by my mom, and she was a horrible listener. And so I just developed the same kind of behavioral pattern as I had in my environment. And I'm not going victim to my mother. I have choices, and I'm making better choices today, and I continue to step into that. But we all need to look at that. Where are our listening skills? How are they showing up? Are you interrupting people? Are you really hearing? Are you making eye contact? Remember last week we talked about, or maybe it was the webinar, we talked about what MJ Durkin said at the boot camp when he said, you will increase 60% your listening skills just by keeping your eyes on their eyes when somebody's talking to you. Just by keeping eye-to-eye contact, you'll increase your listening skills by 60%. That was a huge statistic for me. So that's a reality check that we want to maintain eye contact when they're talking to you. When you're talking to them, it's less important. In fact, you don't want to make it so structured that you're glaring at them. So you've got to have a relaxed look, and you can look away from time to time. But when they're talking to you, eye-to-eye contact. When you're on the phone, how do you have eye-to-eye contact? See, the issue with on the phone is what? That you can't read body language and all the other things. There's so many aspects of our lives when we're out with people that we can read and we can kind of understand and see where they're coming from. When you're on a phone, you only have one thing, and it's called your ears. It's how you hear them. So listening is really important. Number one, he says, listen to what's going on in their environment. So when you call someone up, they answer the phone, you go, hi, this is Mary Jo Hilliker. You remember we went to the whatever it is, and you go, wow. I said, you sounds like you got all the kids at home today, you know, or something. You want to know where they are and bring some empathy into the situation. Now, some of you, if you called somebody and they had kids all around, one of your first reactions might be, did I catch you at a bad time? And MJ Durkin has a philosophy of this. Hey, they answered the phone. When somebody answers the phone, they must be willing to talk, because why else would they answer the phone? Well, that's intriguing, because I think some people answer phones with not a willingness to talk. But with MJ's attitude, he doesn't let people off the hook. He wouldn't say that to them. He would just say, once they answer the phone, he would just say, be empathetic for them. So you hear a kid scream in the background, wow, sounds like you're really busy. Yeah, things are really busy right there. I know when my kids are like that, I can't even hardly handle picking up the phone. You were really brave. Or how do you do it? When you ask that kind of question, then you get a great response sometimes. Right away, they're going, oh, yeah, it's a nightmare sometimes. I don't even know how I keep my life straight. You know, these kids drive you crazy. Their eyes, you're ranting and raving. But you get used to it, and it's just something you got to say, am I going to let them control my life? Or whatever they might, but it'll breed a conversation. So then you can get some bonding that takes place. So he says, don't exit the scene. Just give people credit or being brave or say, how do you do it? I know when my kids are like that, I couldn't do that. So there are a lot of ways to handle it that are professional and going move forward, and don't, you know, just say, oh, this is a bad time, I'll go, right? Listen, the second thing he brought up about the listen for tonality, because tonality can tell you a lot. He says everything. When you listen for tone, you listen at a deeper level. You're listening at a deeper level. So it's not just the words you hear, it's how they're saying those words that you hear. And in the book, he gave some examples of it, and I'll try to use the tonality that he suggests, okay? And this is just when he answers the phone. So if you were calling Michael Durkin, and let's say he was going to be a prospect, okay, and this is how he answers the phone. If you called him up and he said, MJ Durkin, now, what you'd be hearing there is something, a short, a clipped, a fast response. So that immediately, if you're listening properly at that deeper level, you're going to immediately know this person's busy, he's under the gun, he's probably late for an appointment, he's no nonsense, he wants things to happen. So you want to be real crisp and clean and correct with how you approach him, because you've already got background information about where he is at that point, right? MJ Durkin, short, clipped, fast. Then you might hear, call him up, and he might go, MJ Durkin here. Now, that sounds more relaxed, it's slower, it's easy, which means maybe for him, I got an easy day ahead, all my work is up to date, and I'm ready to and open to hear whatever people have to say, right? So there you hear that little more of a relaxed, a slower, an easier pace. And then you might hear him say, call back again, and you might hear this, MJ Durkin. Now you're hearing somebody who's kind of tight, kind of curt, kind of gruff, which means maybe something or someone just ticked me off, and God help you if you're a salesperson with a bad or boring pitch because I need somewhere to vent, and I'm so glad you're the one. Okay, got it. So the tonality means a lot. And then the last example he gives in the book is when he says, "Hey, this is MJ Durkin." Now that would be a light, happy, you know, great kind of result that you get when somebody answers the phone, and right away it probably even brings a smile to your face because of the lightness and the joy in his voice. It typically would mean maybe he just made a huge sale, it's Friday afternoon, work is done, and I'm open to anything you have to say or sell, even if it's stocks in the next up-and-coming ostrich farm in Texas, okay? Because he's happy-go-lucky and he's having a relaxed day, all right? So know the tonality. I just gave you four examples that came out of his book. Just understand that it says a lot. So take that information. It's information you're able to collect merely from tonality. And if they clearly are not in tune with you or your life, I mean, if it's really not because of the background noise, but because by tonality. So if somebody's really gruff and really curt, you could say, I use this all the time with people. I would say, hey, you know, sounds like you got something going on. Did I catch you at a bad time? So I'll let them off because, you know what, you never want to force a presentation on somebody or a call with somebody when they're not ready to receive. You want to make sure they're open-minded. So you just don't want to force it. Or it sound like I caught you in the middle of something. Is there a better time for me to call? Should I give you a call back? You know, whatever that is. Any of that language to use to make sure they hear you, because if there's something really dramatically wrong going on in their life, they're not going to hear you, and that's important. How do you bond over the phone? A couple ideas here. People like people who are like them. That's a comment from Michael, but it's also a comment from everyone. We tend to like people who are like us. So who does Mary Jo, when I get a phone call and I get somebody who is kind of dynamic and energetic and bubbly and promoter personality types and that kind of thing, I enjoy that. Not the heavy-duty promoters that are all about hype and all that kind of, but the people that are joyful and energetic and responsive and all this. I like that, with a little twinge of analyst in there. So that's the kind of person that because it's like me, I can really relate to that, all right? And we tend to be like that. So what does that mean for you? It means when you make a phone call and you get somebody that's a little lighter than you are, lighthearted, like, you might want to try to enter their quadrant. You might want to try to change your phraseology and be a little bit more relaxed. Get out of the stiffness that you might have from your analyst quadrant or whatever, and relax. Relax your language. Relax your patterning. Don't be so stiff in how you approach things. Same way if you end up with an analyst. When I get an analyst on the phone, I mean, it is I's dotted, T's crossed, everything in place, da-da-da, all of that, right? All of that. So you want to be like the person that's on the phone. Number two, you want to try to match them in tonality, pitch, and volume and speed. Tonality, pitch, volume, and speed. So when they have a lighthearted tone, be a lighthearted tone. When they're more serious, you want to have a little bit more structure. If they're really loud on the phone and they use a louder voice, you want to pick up your decibels a little bit. When they're very soft and quiet, you want to be a little bit more soft and more quiet with your voice. And you all have the capacity to do this. It's just making the choice, but understanding it increases your effectiveness with the person you're talking to. In his chapter, look at how I went from 4 to 10. This is actually chapter 10. So I started with 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I went, I'll correct that on the one that we redo. But this is actually his 10th chapter in his book. That's why it's got a 10 in front of it, but it's the 5th item on the outline. Why network marketers are inconsistent with their prospecting and how to fix it. And it's he talked about that. That's a big issue with a lot of us. We don't do the prospecting that we say we're committed to doing. I love it when people say, Mary Jo, I'm going to make 30 calls a day or 15 calls a day. You know, I've never had one person yet do what they say they're going to do around that. And that's a sad thing because it's sadder to me that they are misrepresenting to themselves, and it robs them of their own confidence level. And it also robs them of being able to do the business because they set these unrealistic goals. And so it's crazy. But when you ask people how many prospecting calls should you make per day, people say, I think you should make 10, or I think you should make 20, or I think you should make 5, or, you know, all these. Everybody has different numbers, right? So you might say, and then ask how many calls you should make per day to book appointments to show the opportunity. Michael Durkin says when he asks the first question, he gets everybody in the audience to throw out 10, 20, 30, whatever their numbers are. But when he asks the second question, everybody goes into apoplexy. I mean, they kind of start asking questions. Well, what do you mean by appointments? Or why did you say that? It's hilarious. He says it happens everywhere he goes when he trains. He says, how many calls should you make per day to book appointments to show your opportunity? And all, everybody goes, crash. It's crazy how people respond to that. Because that's their little fear. Because there's a lot of fear hanging out there. So what you want to do is you want to start looking at yourself and say, let's quit making excuses, bunny trails, whatever, gonna have all these kind of stuff. Let's do what we say we're going to do. Let's really commit to that. That's going to be a big part of my 90-day Manatech challenge, too, is I don't want you committed to anything that you're not willing to do. You commit to things because you say, Mary Jo, I'm going to do it. And then you go do it. So if you tell me you're going to call three people a day, then guess what? You're going to call three people a day. You don't let anything get in your way. He says, key to all of this is what causes people not to do the calls. Because they plan a schedule of time, okay, I'm going to call between 7 and 9. When 7 o'clock comes around, one of their kids falls down and scrapes their knee. The husband says, hey, honey, I need you to look at this for me for tomorrow's my work. Or, you know, and you just let everything else in your life, because you know what happens? And he says, that happens Monday, it happens Tuesday, it happens Wednesday, it happens Thursday, it happens Friday. You get done with the week, and guess what? You still haven't made any calls. Because the reality is, life doesn't stop just because you enroll or register for Manatech. You still have life. It still goes on. It still happens all around you. My kids, my grandkids, my niece, my nephew, my husband, my church, all of my foundation, my real estate, all the things I'm involved in. You know what? It all happens. But am I letting it control me, or am I controlling it? That's the difference. It's choice. So what you want to do, but starting again back to what he originally said, was be realistic in what you're going to commit to. Because anytime you commit to things that are unrealistic, you're never going to do them. So if you schedule, what he says, if you schedule 20 and there never seems to be enough time to do 20 calls, so you never even start. So don't say you're going to do 20 calls. Say you're going to make 3 contacts a day or 2 contacts a day. I tried in a group, put together a group about doing the Korean program, the 5x5 plan. 5 contacts a day, 5 presentations a week. And we kicked that off about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And it's intriguing because some of the people that committed that, it's an excuse every week why they haven't done it. Other people said, and I said, you don't need to commit 5x5. Commit 3x3 or 1x1. Whatever you commit to, I just want you to do it. So some of the people that came in at 5x5, today, you know where they are? They're doing 1. And I say, just take a little bite and chew on it and accomplish it. It's going to do more good for you than creating some monster that you never, know how to even start eating up. You don't even know how to tackle it because you've made it so big. So keep it small and manageable. He added rule 19, 1 through 18 we gave last week. If you associate pain with prospecting, you will do everything you can to avoid it. And a lot of you do that. A lot of people in Manatech do that. A lot of people in network marketing do it. There's something about pain. It's painful. Why is it painful to help people? Why is it painful to help people? I don't get that. You don't like rejection? They're not rejecting you. You're just out there to find people who, what, have this goal in their life that they want to be healthier and happier and greater wellness, or they want to have greater financial security, and, some do, some don't. Some do, but they don't want to do anything about it. They want it, but they don't want to do anything about it. Some do, and they want you to make it possible instead of doing something themselves. There are a lot of interesting people in this world, and you're going to come across all these kinds when you're out there talking to people. But the goal should still be, we want to help people and serve them. So it shouldn't be a painful process. It should be something, this is my goal, this is my mission, I'm convicted, and I'm going to go do it. Okay? A great technique he says, set up a goal that you can achieve on a daily basis, normal blocks of time set aside, you commit to the number and get them done throughout the day. In other words, he decides, you have that cell phone, you can make calls during the day, you can do it wherever. You can do it when you're on the bathroom, you can do it when you're picking up the kids, you can do it when you're driving to the grocery store. Say start with 2 or 3 a day and just stick to it. Accomplish the small ones. When you bite off the small ones, you accomplish that. I'm telling you, it will support you and build confidence that you can do anything. So consistency and associating pleasure with your calling can make a huge difference in your prospecting. Chapter 11, tracking your prospecting and holding yourself accountable, critical. I attached to the outline today the tracker sheet that he has at the back of his book, so you can see that. I'm going to actually develop that into a more sophisticated tracker sheet for the 90-day Manatech Challenge program. But you can use it. You can see the what format it needs. You can build your own in an Excel spreadsheet, whatever you want to do. But you have to do what? Have accountability. Review where you are. Track your daily activity. It's going to be required in life. All these things don't come natural, especially if you have a negative issue. If you have some kind of downside to prospecting, I can guarantee you you're not going to make it happen unless you put accountability in place and tracking to keep on top of it. And he said there are a bunch of people, when he goes over this tracker sheet, I'll tell you this is kind of cute. He says when he goes over this tracker sheet in different seminars, he has like four or five different types of people. He says, number one, some of you will love the idea of the tracker and will say that you'll do it, but you know what? Even after you say you're going to commit to using it for the 30 days, you don't. He calls this person the motivated wisher. They wish they would do it, but they don't. Some of you will use the tracker sporadically. In other words, you'll use it now, use it then. At the end of each day, you'll groan and say, oh, no, I totally forgot about it. I'll do it tomorrow. He calls this person the absent-minded prospector. Some of you will use the tracker for about 2 weeks, and then you'll lose interest. You may make your goal every day, but if you don't get results right away after 2 weeks, you'll decide that it doesn't work and it was wasting your time. He calls this person the doubting prospector. I call it a person tied into short-term only, not creating long-term results. And what book would I have them read, right? Everybody know? I'm not telling. It's your guess. What book did I do last year? I'm not even telling. But it's people that don't understand that if we change little things in our life day in and day out, week after week, month after month, you may not see results today, but what happens? By the end of the year, huge results. All right? And that's that person. Okay, the fourth one, he said, some of you will set an activity goal that is higher than most because you just can't see the value of setting the bar so low. Right? So you set it lofty goals to impress yourself, and you think it impresses other people because you're telling everybody what you're going to set the goal. As a matter of fact, you never hit it. And you're very glad you didn't hit it because you shot so high. But you'll notice something about setting a high goal. If you look at the tracker each day, morning and night, you'll notice that many days you don't even make any dials. He calls this person the overachieving prospector. And then the fifth one, he said, some of you will say, I've been looking for something like this to keep my prospecting on track. You'll look at the tracker day and night. You'll put a realistic activity goal in each day's space, and you'll do everything short of calling your relatives by the end of the day to match the dials with the goal. You'll do the tracker every day for 30 days. You'll carry it with you in your planner. You know what he calls these people? The platinum presidentials. Right, exactly. So your choice, how you do it. Accountability is critical, so hold yourself accountable. And the last chapter of his book was what to say when you call your contacts and how to book a solid appointment. This was fascinating to me, and I can't wait to use this. I mean, it's a technique because he talks about it. Well, he says rule number 20 is what? You're under no obligation to answer any of their questions, and it actually will hurt you if you do. That's something new because I always tend to answer everybody's questions. But his attitude is, you know what? You're in an interview process, the person to sort, to find out if they're going to be a good prospect for your business. So you have the power. Your attitude is critical. You have what they need. Are they worthy of getting that? I mean, it's like, so why are you, when you go on an interview, you don't, the person that's being interviewed doesn't ask all the questions. The interviewer asks the questions. He says there's six distinct steps to making a quality call. So this would be after you already ran into somebody and you collected their contact information. Remember we went over there that last week, how to collect somebody's contact information. You haven't presented them any business, anything like that. All you've done is you kind of gave them a little brief quip about what you do, and you'd love to get back in contact with them and talk some more. And so you got their contact information, you got their card, you asked them for their business card, you went through the introduction to yourself, hey, I'm Mary Jo, and your name is, after you did the breaking ice thing, all that structure is there. And now you're following up with the phone call. Six steps. Number one. Hi, John, this is Mike Durkin. I don't know if you remember me, but we met. Notice how he doesn't just say, hey, this is Michael Durkin. You don't call somebody and have an expectation they're going to remember who you are. Draw back to the time you met each other so they can have a relationship and then think about and get a visual of who they're talking to. Critical. Okay? And when you use the language, I don't know if you remember me, but That's called a paradox question. It challenges the mind and it evokes a stronger response from them. So that's why he promotes that. Number two, time. Stop trying to book appointments with people who do not have an open mind to it. All right? So after he does the intro about who he is, he says, do you have 30 to 50 seconds to talk? Why does he use that language? Number one, it's not apologetic. Am I interrupting you? So do you have 30 to 50 seconds to talk? Very short and brief. Number two, it acknowledges that you have interrupted them and there may be a better time. So you're just kind of like, it's kind of coming across like, hey, all I'm trying to do is grab a real brief period of time because I know I might be interrupting you. Three, it is different language than what you're used to. A lot of people would say, do you have a minute? Well, that just sounds like every other telemarketer or network marketer. Am I interrupting you? Again, language I've used historically that everybody uses. So do you have 30 to 50 seconds to talk? That sounds great to me. I like that. And it also gives them a notification that you also have a limited time. In other words, you don't have time to sit around and, you know, spend an hour on the phone with them. Now, he gives a bunch of responses in the book, but I don't have time to go over that because we're already over time. So let me just finish the last three parts of your call. Reason for the call is the next step. So you find out if they have 30 seconds, 50 seconds, right? Then the reason comes. Because when somebody first answers the call and you're on the phone, the first two things that come to mind is, who is this person and what are they calling me for? Those are always the first two things that come to every, and you know that. That's psychology. So let's answer those questions. So after they have time for the call, you say, the reason for my call is this. And he gives a reason in there, and I'm just going to suggest that we all draft our own reason for the call. I'll tell you what his is briefly here. He goes, hi, John, the reason for my call is this. I work with some partners of mine from wherever, whatever place, who have developed a business where we show people how to use the Internet to move goods and services. We've developed a profile of the kind of person that we like to work with, and you impress me as having some of the qualities that we were looking for. John, when it comes to making money, do you keep your options open? Isn't that kind of cute? I kind of like that. But we can formulate our own. Script, using a script. This is the scripting part. So you have a reason for the call. So you develop yours, okay, and you have a question in there. That's the third part of your call. Number four is a qualifier. Because remember, you're still interviewing them. No reason to be needy. I don't need them. Do they need me? Do we have something that fits? So you want to say, well, what I would need to do is sit down with you for about 40 minutes or so and ask you some questions. Based on your answers, I'll know whether or not there's a fit between us and whether or not I would make a recommendation to my partners and if we should go forward. Get it? You're qualifying. You're going to tell them, I need 40 minutes of your time. We're going to sit down. We're going to ask you some questions and go over some things, and then I'll know whether it's a fit or whether I should make a recommendation to my partners to have you join us. Right? Great. All right, so that's four. Five is booking the appointment. But it actually is part of four as well. When you're talking about whether it's being a fit, you got to recognize something. The reason most prospects don't readily invite you to come over or have a meeting with them is why. And you know what? This is intriguing to me. He said, it's because they don't want to say no to you. We have seen so many pitches and sales things and all that kind of stuff, and we don't like to, because we feel bad when we have to say no to somebody. We want to help them, and we don't want to go that direction, so we're going to end up saying no. So we don't even want to have the appointment because we don't want to feel bad when we have to say no to somebody. Incredible psychology here, people, when you think about it. Think it through because it's accurate. I love this part. This was new to me to really listen to this and hear this. Probably had seen it before, but I was here, you know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears. But he says, so this is what he uses. After he talks about the fit language, he says, but if you don't think it's a fit for you, would you feel comfortable in telling me that it's not for you and we need not go further? Can you tell me no? So you ask that in the question before. So you set them up with it. And most people say, well, yeah, I have no problem telling you no. You just overcome the hurdle for the appointment. And you haven't even asked for the appointment yet. Isn't that great? So the minute when somebody says, well, sure, I have no problem. I could tell you no. And you go, great. Do you have your calendar ready? And you jump right into booking the appointment. Isn't that neat? Love the strategy. I think it's brilliant. Post-closing the appointment, so after you close out, that you know what time and date and all that kind of stuff, and then you want to make sure you add this at the end. Okay, so I'm writing it down in my book for whatever that did is. Before I go, is there any reason you wouldn't consider this to be a confirmed solid appointment? Is there any reason? That should actually be a question mark at the end of that thing. Isn't that great? So now you don't have to worry about people not showing up. I mean, they still might not show up, but you know what? You've done all you could to get them there. All right, people, that's the end of MJ Durkin's book. What do you think? Any feedback from you guys? Did any of you have some aha moments like I did in these last six chapters? Everybody?
This is Ann.
Hi, Ann.
Hi. Oh, yeah. I'm the one that hated scripts, too.
Yeah. Can you see the value of them here?
Absolutely. Because I'm probably your most, as you know, bunny trail person in the world.
Right. Yeah.
So I think this would make it a lot more crisp. And, you know, I think what you were telling, what he says about the phone and being only having your ears is really important. I know I do that kind of naturally because I've done phoning. But now doing it purposefully will be really good.
Good. Thanks, Ann. Great. Anyone else want to share?
Hi, Mary Jo. This is Alan Keeley in Seattle.
Hi, Alan Keeley in Seattle. How are you?
Great. I didn't hear about the book until a week ago this morning when I heard about your call.
Right.
But I ordered it that day, and I've been chomping at the bit waiting for it to show up in the mail because I've never seen a book that shows examples of such strong posture in my life.
Yeah, I know, isn't it? It's really strong posture.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
I'll read half the book the day I get it.
There you go. And it's a quick read, so you'll probably do good at that. It's not a tough read, but great.
Good. So thank you very much for recommending it.
Absolutely, and great. And you know what? What's really cool for you, Alan, is the fact that, you know, you've already had two trainings on it, so when you read the book, you're going to even get much more out of it. So that's really good.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Yep, absolute.
Hi, Mary Jo.
Okay.
This is Rudy.
Hey, Rudy.
Hey, Mary Jo, I've listened to CDs and taken some notes, but this call has just awakened, I guess, a few more brain cells because it brings out more clearly what he's trying to say with you retelling it again in my mind. And so I thank you very much for that because it did bring some points that I totally missed on the CDs, even though I took notes.
Right, got it. Oh, I know. It's just seeing it through somebody else's eyes, you know, and right now you're seeing it through my eyes. I read the book, and this is what I got out of it that was so impactful. So to the extent I can help you out to find more value in it, that's wonderful. Thanks, Rudy. Great. Okay, everybody, let me let you go. It's been a long day. It's Monday. Remember, let's get some work out. I will get you the answer on the transition on the comp plan to be clear on that since I may have a misunderstanding, but that's what I was told, so I will get that clarified. And I will also give you the replay information for Dr. John Rollins. And keep your eyes open today to get some information on our 90-day Manatech Challenge. Okay. Love y'all.